96.5 FM in Sarasota and WBPVLP 100.1 FM in Bradenton. You can find us on the web at wslr.org. The views and opinions expressed by hosts, guests, and callers on WSLR programs are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of WSLR, its staff, or volunteers. This is the Progressive Page Turner. I'm Marianne Barisonic. On this program, we'll talk about books with the people who wrote them. In the early 1940s, the Chambers Works Chemical Plant in Deepwater, New Jersey, operated in secret as part of the Manhattan Project. Its product was essential to the production of nuclear weapons. But workers were regularly hospitalized with breathing problems and chemical burns. There were frequent explosions. In the surrounding countryside, peach crops burnt up, pastures were littered with dead cattle and chickens, horses were crippled. People who picked and ate the produce would vomit for hours. The plant wasn't producing a radioactive substance. They were producing fluorocarbons, also known as PFAS, a class of chemicals that didn't exist until humans produced them and now can be found even in the most remote parts of the world. In her book, They Poisoned the World, Mariah Blake takes us from the Manhattan Project to the Trump regime. Mariah, thanks so much for talking with me.
Thank you so much for having me.
When I read the description of the havoc caused by this plant, I wondered, how did these chemicals become so ubiquitous? What are they used for?
Well, the story begins actually at that very plant. So that plant, as you mentioned, was operating as part of the Manhattan Project, and something that most people, even people who research PFAS, don't know about these chemicals is that they were actually developed by the U.S. government as part of the top secret Manhattan Project. As you mentioned, it was clear early on that there were some dangers. People who worked with plants had all kinds of health problems. There was damage to the farms downwind of the plants. And this all alarmed Manhattan Project officials, and they began secretly studying the health effects of these chemicals in the 1940s and had established by 1947 that they were highly toxic and that they were accumulating in human blood. Nonetheless, after the war, a company named 3M was allowed to acquire a patent to produce these materials, and it hired Manhattan Project chemists who began developing them for use by manufacturers and also to be marketed to consumers. So Scotchgard is one of the earliest examples. 3M's Scotchgard fabric protector is made with PFAS. These chemicals, formerly known as per- and polyfluoroalkyl substances, or PFAS, these chemicals, they became so ubiquitous partially because they are so useful. So they're a large family of chemicals with some really remarkable properties. They're resistant to heat, stains, water, grease, electrical currents. They stand up to corrosive chemicals that burn through almost anything else, including stainless steel. And that's why they were used in the Manhattan Project. They needed something to contain the extremely caustic chemicals that were used in uranium enrichment. And after the war, they found all kinds of uses. So they found their way into thousands of consumer goods, everything from dental floss to lipstick, cookware, baby diapers, contact lenses. They're everywhere. So they became so ubiquitous, one, because they're highly useful, and two, because of their properties. One of the things that defines these chemicals is that they don't break down. So they persist in the environment for hundreds or even thousands of years, and they're highly mobile in the environment. And as a result, they are polluting the entire planet, including human blood and ecosystems in the remotest parts of the globe.
Are the products themselves toxic or just the production of them? Because we're talking about Teflon and Gore-Tex, and you're saying they're in everything, including like dental floss and contact lenses?
Teflon is a fluorinated plastic, so it's a PFAS that's a plastic, but they're all different types of chemicals. that fall into this category. The vast majority of them are toxic, at least the ones that have been studied. In the case of fluorinated plastics, like Teflon, Teflon itself is not toxic, but they have to use other PFAS to manufacture it, additives, and those additives are extremely toxic. So they end up around the plants where Teflon is manufactured. They end up in the products that are made with Teflon, and as a result, consumers absorb them into their bodies, and these products also then get put into landfills, and they migrate through the environment.
So all of this contamination could have been prevented if they had just not put the waste products from the production facilities into the water and landfills.
Well, not necessarily, because the thing is that it spreads through the air. So anything that goes out the smokestacks, it actually travels through the upper atmosphere and falls with rain around the world. So one study of rainwater around the world found that the levels of PFAS everywhere in the world, including the remotest regions, places like the Tibetan Plateau, contain levels that are high enough to endanger human health and the environment. Levels that are higher than the EPA safety standard. The same is true of breast milk in many parts of the world.
Breast milk is toxic because of PFAS contamination.
Yes.
That description of the problems at that first plant, I assume that was the first plant, they saw that this was really, really toxic, and yet they went ahead and produced it all over the place.
The U.S. government, as I mentioned, collected data that found these chemicals were highly toxic and were accumulating in human blood in the 1940s. By the 1970s, government researchers had discovered that these chemicals were accumulating in the blood of people all over the country. The early research happened under the auspices of the Manhattan Project, which was very secretive. As you know, the secret project to develop the nuclear bomb. And so the data was withheld partially on national security grounds and partially because the government worried that there would be litigation, that they and their contractors would be sued. So they suppressed the information. And in fact, this information was withheld from the public even after all other Manhattan Project documents with no bearing on national security were released. And then industry also conducted a bunch of secret research on these chemicals, and that began around the 1960s.
If this contamination is so ubiquitous, is it really that toxic? Because it's like if we all have it in our bloodstream, what kinds of problems do we see from this?
So these chemicals are associated with an incredibly long list of disease, including cancer, infertility, obesity, thyroid disease, diabetes, reduced IQ, immune suppression, and life-threatening pregnancy complications. They also impede fetal development. And these are just some examples. There are a number of other conditions that have been linked to these chemicals. And the data is overwhelming. We're talking tens of thousands of studies at this point. The EPA has determined that the two best known and best studied of these chemicals are not safe at any level of exposure. They have health effects at the levels that the average person carries in their blood. One of the things that makes PFAS so harmful is that they alter the levels of hormones in our body. And chemicals that alter hormones can cause a very wide range of diseases because hormones govern growth and development. So especially prenatally, they can cause all kinds of problems. You know, subtle changes to baby's brain and organs that can manifest as all kinds of diseases later in life. And there's pretty clear evidence that some alarming public health trends are linked to exposure to these chemicals. So, for example, reduced sperm count. The average sperm count in Western countries has declined by about 60% since the 1970s. There's not any debate among scientists about the cause of that trend. It has to do with toxic chemicals like PFAS. Rising rates of diabetes and obesity and certain cancers, scientists are pretty confident that exposure to hormone-disrupting chemicals is one of the factors driving those trends. So it's impossible to say whether a disease in any given person is caused by exposure to these chemicals, but there are some pretty clear indications that they're driving negative trends, not necessarily just PFAS, but PFAS and other chemicals that have similar effects.
How are these chemicals being regulated? Are they being regulated?
They're not really. No. So the entire system for regulating chemicals in this country presumes that they're safe until proven otherwise. It's a principle that was first articulated by a DuPont scientist during the war over leaded gasoline back in the 1920s. And the way it's manifest in our laws is the main law governing chemical safety in this country. All the chemicals that were in existence at the time that it passed were grandfathered in. That's most of the chemicals that are used in commerce today. And even new chemicals weren't required to be tested for safety under most circumstances. So as a result, and this is something that I found shocking when I first learned it, the vast majority of chemicals on the market today have never undergone any form of safety testing, at least not that the public or regulators know about. Industry has been secretly studying the health effects of numerous chemicals for decades, but they have kept their own findings secret. And when the public does find out about it's a result of happenstance or litigation.
That example that you gave about the lead in the gasoline, I thought that was pretty egregious because apparently they could have used ethanol and that wouldn't have been that toxic, but they could patent that form of lead and they did that even though they knew it was really toxic. And we've had lead contamination in the environment now for a long time, even though it's not legal to be leaded anymore. But companies didn't care about the health effects. They just wanted to be able to patent it to be able to make more money. And now what you're saying is the same thing is going on with these chemicals. They know for a fact that they're very toxic and they're responsible for all kinds of problems that we're seeing. But nobody's moving because, what, they're making too much money at this?
Companies rarely give up a product that's highly lucrative. There is so much incentive to increase quarterly profits, and their first obligation is to shareholders. So unless governments or the public hold them accountable, there is no reason for them to take steps to protect the public health. History has borne this out again and again, I'm afraid.
So Teflon was taken off the market in 2015.
No.
No?
No. Teflon is still used. It's still manufactured in large quantities and used in millions of products. The chemical that was used as an additive in Teflon early on, PFOA, was phased out in 2015. But DuPont simply replaced it with another PFAS. And this is how things often work, because in this country, we regulate chemicals one by one. So when a given chemical is phased out for whatever reason, industry usually just replaces it with another chemical that has a similar structure and properties, but that often turns out to be just as harmful. So in the case of PFOA, DuPont replaced it with a chemical called Gen X that it claimed was safer. We now know that that is probably not true. So the data that's been collected to date suggests that Gen X is actually more toxic than PFOA, and it's more problematic than PFOA in a lot of other ways. So the difference between the older generation of PFAS that were phased out and the newer generation that are used now is the chain link. So how many carbons are in the chain? They're made up of a chain of carbon and fluorine. And so the older ones were longer chain and the newer ones are shorter chain and were supposed to be safer. But we now know that those shorter chain chemicals move more readily through the environment than the chemicals they replaced. They are taken up more readily by crops, which leads to higher concentrations in food, and they are more difficult to remove from drinking water. In fact, some of them cannot be removed from drinking water at all with the technologies that we have that can be used at a large scale. So they can be removed with reverse osmosis, but that is not financially feasible for most utilities.
officially in hurricane season, which runs through November 30th. Don't wait for a storm to form. Know your risk and prepare your evacuation plan now. Evacuation plans are crucial and should include knowing when to evacuate. Even if water can't be seen from your home, storm surge can travel for miles inland in Sarasota County. Be prepared for power outages or flooding. Know your level. Manufactured homes, RVs, vessels, and homes that can't withstand strong winds or heavy rains are not safe during a hurricane, and all are included in evacuation level A. For more information and preparedness resources, visit scgov.net/beprepared. You're listening to the Progressive Page Turner. My guest is Mariah Blake, and we're talking about her book, They Poisoned the World. Wasn't there any testing done on these Gen X chemicals? Because the reason that the first generation of these chemicals was taken off the market was because they were toxic. And then nobody tested the replacement to see if it was toxic?
The EPA didn't even know what chemical DuPont was using in place of PFOA, because they can hide the identities of chemicals by claiming their confidential business information. So a team of scientists led by two scientists at the EPA's Office of Research and Development, which the Trump administration just shuttered, spent years reverse engineering the formula of the chemicals downstream of a former DuPont plant to try to figure out what they were using in place of PFOA. And they eventually stumbled on the formula for the replacement in a filing that DuPont had made with a state government, just sort of by happenstance. They were able to figure it out. They were able to figure out what chemical DuPont was using. And we now know that that chemical is also polluting human blood and ecosystems all over the world. It is almost as widespread as the chemical it replaced, and potentially even more harmful.
The regulators don't know what chemicals they're using. Basically, the chemical companies have free rein to do whatever they want, and it's only if the EPA can catch up with them at some point. But they don't have to tell them what they're using.
No. No, they don't. So one scientist described the situation this way, one public scientist who's working in the interest of the public health: we are always chasing a train that's already left the station. Scientists are studying the last generation of chemicals. They aren't even aware. They're struggling to figure out what is being used now, what is prevalent in the environment now. So just recently, scientists discovered that there's a type of PFAS that's more prevalent in the environment than all others combined, and they just didn't have the tools to detect it. And it is also apparently toxic. There's limited data on it. So yeah, it's a game of whack-a-mole.
I am just left gobsmacked, because I guess it's a fantasy to believe that there's any regulation on these industries. And the industries themselves seem to be run by people who don't have a problem with all kinds of health problems coming from their manufacturing facilities and their products.
Our best hope is ordinary citizens, and that's the other dimension of the book. You know, I followed this community of Hoosick Falls, New York, where the drinking water is contaminated with PFAS, and where ordinary citizens sounded the alarm about it and fought to get the community clean drinking water and all kinds of other concessions that they felt the community needed, including medical monitoring so they could be monitored for the diseases that are associated with these chemicals and diagnosed early if they developed them so that they could be more effectively treated. And that has been happening all over the country. So you have right now a network of unlikely activists all over the country fighting to turn off the tap on these chemicals and making remarkable headway. I can give you some examples of the impact they've had on policy, but it's dramatic. And it's happening more at the state level than federal level.
Okay, so give us some examples.
Well, so largely as the result of ordinary citizens applying pressure, 30 U.S. states have adopted a total of 170 different laws restricting PFAS, including at least 16 full or partial bans on these chemicals in consumer products. Now, that is groundbreaking because that is not how we regulate chemicals in this country. We normally regulate them one by one, and that leads to the problem that I was just describing, where you end up replacing one bad chemical with another bad chemical. In addition, you have another 200 bills in the pipeline, and even deep red states like Texas and Oklahoma and Montana are weighing crackdowns. In fact, Montana is weighing a consumer product ban. The European Union is also weighing a class-wide ban on these chemicals. So people are recognizing, because of the unique threat by these chemicals and the fact that they don't break down, that they'll be with us forever. And what happened with the PFOA and Gen X saga, I think that's opened people's eyes to just how flawed our system is. And as a result, you have some state legislatures and regulatory bodies around the world taking a different approach. They're banning the entire class of chemicals.
And we can't get legislation passed at a national level like that, but the states are picking up the slack, is what you're saying.
Yeah, the states are picking up the slack. There has been legislation that has been passed on the federal level. For example, one of the leading sources of PFAS contamination in the environment is fluorinated firefighting foam, which is used at airports, military bases, and firehouses all around the country and has been for decades.
Is this when they're fighting the wildfires and they're dropping that red stuff?
It's not the red stuff, it's white stuff, and it's often used in training exercises on military bases. But Congress has passed a law to phase out that kind of firefighting foam on military bases. So there is broad bipartisan support for regulating these chemicals, partially as a result of the fact that so many Americans in red states and blue are drinking water that's contaminated with these chemicals. Currently, nearly half of all Americans are known to be drinking water that's polluted with PFAS. And that is, the actual percentage is sure to be much higher because a large share of public water supplies haven't been tested. But in communities where people have learned their drinking water is polluted, that these chemicals are in their blood, that the farms surrounding their communities are polluted and their food supply is polluted, people are very hard hit by this. It feels very personal to know that there are toxic chemicals in their blood, in their children's blood, in their drinking water. And so there has been this powerful grassroots movement that has been driving some major changes. There's also a tsunami of litigation. So there's at least 15,000 lawsuits pending against manufacturers. And the combination of the legislation and the litigation is shifting market forces in a major way. So 3M, the world's largest manufacturer of PFAS, has announced that it will quit producing them by the end of this year.
That's huge.
Yeah. I wrote an entire article in the New York Times where I talk about these unlikely activists, firefighters, factory workers, suburban moms, pastors all over the country who have banded together to fight for restrictions on PFAS and are actually being successful. And I make the case that they're the most powerful grassroots movement since Silent Spring. So that's the hopeful dimension of the story, that ordinary citizens are mobilizing to protect their families and their communities from these chemicals. And in the process, they are helping to protect us all from these chemicals. And I think the litigation is especially powerful. So that wave is engulfing consumer brands now. So the makers of Band-Aids and Trojan condoms and L'Oreal and Snapple have all been sued because there's PFAS in their products and they don't disclose it. The potential liability is mammoth. So much of the economy is at risk. And, you know, so as a result, you not only have companies like 3M getting out of the business, 40 major retail chains with more than $1.7 trillion in combined annual sales have announced that they will eliminate or radically reduce PFAS in their product lines. And I'm talking companies like Apple, Home Depot, McDonald's, Amazon, I believe that these forces have the potential to actually push us to the tipping point where continuing to use PFAS is such a liability and the market for alternatives is so lucrative that we actually begin to make progress towards turning off the tap on these chemicals faster than we possibly could with regulation, because regulation moves slowly and markets move fast. Now, the Trump administration, obviously what's happening in Washington doesn't move us closer to a solution. There's some major roadblocks that are being thrown up, but states are continuing to move. There's new legislation cropping up almost on a weekly basis. The EU countries are banning these chemicals. There's more and more litigations. The factors that are driving this change are continuing to accelerate.
But there's no way of getting this out of the environment, what's already there. They're called forever chemicals for a reason. And even if people get safe drinking water, that's because the water is being filtered. But if it's coming down in the rainwater, all the animals, those are all going to continue to be contaminated.
Yes, you can filter these chemicals out of drinking water, or at least some of them. As I mentioned, there are certain types that it's almost impossible to filter out of drinking water with the technologies we have now. But once you have filtered them out of drinking water, you have to do something with them. And your option is, one, to put them in a landfill, but all landfills eventually leak, or two, to incinerate them. But if you don't incinerate them at a high enough temperature, they just break down into other PFAS and spread further afield. And there are only three incinerators in the entire country that are hot enough to actually destroy these chemicals. So there is really no way to dispose of them.
Once the genie was out of the bottle, there's no putting it back.
Our best hope is to turn off the tap. People who study these chemicals, that's what they're asking for. Because what you have right now is a rapid accumulation in the environment. And some of them, we have no idea what they're doing to us. By the time we figure it out, it will be too late. They are already out in the environment. They're already in our bloodstreams.
You had talked about how the Trump administration was pulling funding from the studies of these chemicals.
It actually shut down its entire research arm, the Office of Research and Development. A lot of the science that the federal regulations of PFAS and also the state level laws are based on was conducted by EPA scientists. The methods that we use to detect PFAS in drinking water were developed by EPA scientists. And you know, I was talking earlier about the fact that scientists had to reverse engineer the formula of the PFOA replacement GenX. That was done by EPA scientists at this office that Trump has shut down. So that is a huge setback to the public health, because a lot of research that benefits the public health came out of that office.
One of the things that I was thinking about when I was reading your book was we've got this big push to get AI out there now. And people like Jeffrey Hinton, who is called the godfather of AI, has called for it to be regulated. And I know this isn't your field, but it's the same kind of thing, isn't it? We're just jumping in with a technology where we don't know what the consequences are going to be.
I actually think it's a very apt comparison, because you're unleashing something on the world that you can't take back. You can't put the genie back in the bottle, as you said. And if you're unleashing it without considering the consequences, then you wind up in the same situation that we have with PFAS, where once you begin to grasp the consequences, it's too late to remedy the problem.
Well, this has been really cheery. You've been listening to the Progressive Page Turner. My guest today has been Mariah Blake, and we've been talking about her book, They Poisoned the World, Life and Death in the Age of Forever Chemicals.